Please enjoy this ringback tone while your podcast is reached.
This is Raquel and Chelsea, and you're listening to Baroque Bitches. Welcome to Baroque Bitches, your art and art history gossip podcast. I'm Raquel.
I'm Chelsea.
And we are here for another week of down and dirty details on your favorite art history people. We're taking this highbrow art world and we're giving you the lowbrow, dirty, disgusting
yes, of it. Finally. I've been waiting all week for some gross shit.
Let's make the walls dirty in this white fucking gallery. What are we doing? What are we doing here? Why? Why are the gallery
walls? I always felt that it was weird that the gallery walls are always so white and stark and hospitally. You know, I mean, it's like, this is distracting. I get that you're trying not to make this distracting, but this is so fucking distracting. Well,
especially if you ever work in a gallery, they're like so, oh my God. Like, I only volunteered once at the Sonoma State Gallery and it was too much for me.
Yeah. I did a couple of galleries. I did the DeRosa, which was actually really fun and weird. And then I did another gallery at CCA, because I went to school at California College of the Arts, and their gallery in Oakland. And it was so fucking boring, dude.
Really?
Yes. Yeah. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
I was like, when you go into those little galleries and it's not an opening and it's just like a regular day, talk to the person at the desk. They're so bored, dude. They want to tell you
galleries
about it.
Galleries have this precedence of being like, you got to be quiet. You can't be loud. I got to look at the art. It's like a fucking library or something. But even the library, I feel like I have a better time sometimes.
Dude, for sure. Galleries can be so like
stuffy.
You go in and then you're like, God, what? I didn't realize how squeaky my shoes
are. I'm so nervous. Like, oh, God, what if you had to fart?
It is that would so bad. Distracting.
It is. It's hard to feel like you're out of place. So we hope all of you, you know, maybe you're interested in art, you don't know where to begin. This is a perfect spot for you. This is a safe place. You know, you
we know all the shit. Yeah. Like, the stuff that makes you uncomfortable makes us uncomfortable, too.
Yeah, wear your squeaky shoes, fart in your car, nobody cares here.
Yeah, no, for sure. You can talk. You can talk in there.
Yeah.
I'm allowed to talk in there.
Actually, somebody told me they were talking back to the podcast, and I thought that was so cool. Like, so talking with us.
One of us.
But yeah, so this week, the social media world has been blowing my mind this week. Drake released a dick pic. Did you?
Oh, no, I don't know this. How do I not know Drake's
dick? You know what's funny is actually my husband told me about it. He's like, so have you been hearing about this thing and have you seen it? And I was like, no, I didn't see it. And I still haven't seen it. I'm really not interested in seeing it. But the comment section had me dying. People are so fucking mean. But basically what I can gather from the visual of what people put together is that it's long and lean. Like a noodle.
Like a noodle? Like maybe a hard noodle?
I don't know. Actually, that's
long
a good question.
And, like a mozzicholi.
People
like a
of the
hard
internet.
Mozzicholi. Or was one of the curly ones? I'm picturing a fucking noodle right now. Long and lean.
Long and lean.
Okay.
People were talking about how it looks like a noodle. And then I love when other people come to the defense of the celebrity and they're like, listen, if Drake were to hit on you right now, I don't think you'd be complaining about his noodle dick. And it's like,
okay, well, why don't you date him then, dude? Like, right? That's wonderful. I'm so glad you like his noodle.
But yeah, so an exciting world.
My 60s interpretation outfit.
So cute.
With my
I am wearing a black turtleneck, but this is kind of my uniform anyway. But
you're more the mod and a more like flower power kind of vibe, right?
Yeah. Yeah. There's definitely, oh my God, there's so many decades we need to get through. So we need to hop on this. But noodles translate really well into today's theme because, you know, okay. Chicken noodle soup, Andy Warhol. Bowl of dicks. All right.
I'm just still picturing a fucking mostaccioli.
A what?
A mostaccioli, you know, the noodle that's like a little tube.
No, but I'm going to look it up.
A mostaccioli. It's a fucking tube noodle.
And like rigatoni.
I'm just picturing some guy fucking flopping out a mostaccioli. Oh, my God. That's in my head right now.
Oh, my God. Well, I'm going to keep the soup theme going. So are we ready to visualize?
Visualize.
All right. Let's go. Let's visualize. Get home. Open the door you've come through a million times before. Up the stairs. Drop your keys into that little dish, hearing the familiar chime. Three keys simultaneously hitting porcelain. Like that sound, you've finally made it. You're safe, back from the outside world. You walk down the wooden floor hallway into your room. Your bed just looks so dreadfully empty and filled with crumpled bedsheets you didn't have time or care to make. Mom must not be here this week. Oh, that's right. She's visiting Paul. I should sleep, but it just seems like such a waste of time. Maybe eat something first. There's a cupboard full of all your favorites. You've seen this image so many times before. Chicken noodle, tomato, beef bouillon, chicken and rice. You take out a pan, you empty the cans. Look at this red, black, white, silver, and gold. It's just perfect, isn't it? It always offers the same thing. It's always the same. That perfect taste. You know exactly what to expect. You know what's awaiting you. And it's always there for you, just like an old friend to give you a hug when you need it. What more could you want from a meal than a perfectly salty, balanced bowl of soup? This is comfort. This is consumerism. This is America. And it's famous, this soup. I've made it famous, and it's made me famous. Isn't that just perfect? And I hope they all never find out. But I meant every image. I meant everything I said I didn't. Every single second meant something to me. So welcome to Andy Warhol, Love Me or Hate Me, It's Still an Obsession.
Ooh. Okay, yeah. I love that. Getting right into the soup.
It's just like soup, Andy Warhol. You just can't. Soup. They're one and the
it's
same.
Soupy.
Soupy sales.
It's soupy.
I mean, I know. Right. And I mean, it's so this guy is everything. I mean, I sort of thought I hated him, but I ended up really loving him through learning about him. So I'm excited to bring you into this story. Yeah. And I know everybody knows who he is, but what are your thoughts on Warhol? What's your take, Chelsea?
I think Warhol is the, you know, king of pop art. Mm-hmm. Questions, what is art? Is it commodity? Is it, what the fuck is it? I know that his work sells more than Rembrandt's and all the guys that we think are the you know, your typical traditional fine artists.
The art.
Yeah, like a self-portrait of Rembrandt's going to be, you know, less, a couple million dollars less than one of his, you know, 50 prints of Marilyn Monroe, which is just bizarre. Everybody's just like, but why though?
Wow.
It's a stolen image too.
We're going to get into it. We will get there. Oh my God. Cool. Are we going to get so hard into it? And so many people have a lot of opinions, but man, oh man. And do you like Campbell's soup? Did you have memories?
I do like Campbell's soup. I do have some Campbell's soup. I like the tomato with, like, the best comfort is, like, tomato soup with fucking grilled cheese. Dip that bitch in there. Oh my gosh, it's so good. And then I definitely grew up eating chicken noodle soup, Campbell's chicken noodle soup for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, still. Because
it's America.
Because it's America.
I'm American.
Right? I mean.
That's just what we do.
Yeah. And I, you know, my mom would make me chicken noodle soup with butter toast. And
that's the one. Right? You're homesick and your mom brings
put
you
on
like
the
a
cartoons.
Yes.
Put on some Hey Arnold, some Ren and Stimpy.
Hey Arnold.
Get that bowl of soup.
Chicken noodle soup, some saltines. My mom always compared it with saltines.
Oh, man.
And some when I was six, she would always give me some ginger ale too. Aww. And that is totally comfort. Yeah. Maybe like a Coca-Cola.
A Coca-Cola, dude.
Coca-Cola. Because we're American. We do all the same shit.
America. Yeah, no. I mean, and it's still to this day. I mean, I think Campbell's has always been that way. And so we're going to go full on into this. It's a long story. Ooh. So buckle the fuck up. But let's start off with some context. So ASL, yes. Give me a who, give me a what,
yeah.
Give me a where, give me a why.
The fuck?
What the fuck do we care? So our story starts in the late 1920s, 1928. And this would have been the same year that Herbert Hoover is elected as president. The first successful black newspaper, Atlanta Daily World, is founded. The first machine-sliced and machine-wrapped loaf of bread is sold.
And the sliced bread.
Yeah, sliced bread. In a bag. Fucking genius. The first Mickey Mouse sound film is released. And penicillin is finally invented. Fuck yeah. No more syphilis.
No more syphilis.
Unless you're Al Capone. So... America's fucking booming. This is the roaring 20s. And the GNP increased by 40%. So that gross net products, it just means like the amount of shit you can buy in a store or magazine increased by 40%. So we're moving away from farming type life and heading towards this great capitalist, buy everything, Amazon, Jeff Bezos, dependent.
Sale.
Roll back. Do you remember the Walmart ads? Roll back. Things are booming, but of course people are still super fucking poor in the majority of America. And immigration is super evident in the landscape. And there's this one little town in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, that has a neighborhood of Slavic transplants, which includes the Warhola family. So
Warhola.
So this part of town would have been really like not the best situation. Poor, sort of rough and tough. Andy describes it as the worst place in the world.
Okay.
That gives you an idea of how it
sucks.
I'm just picturing like a lot of smog and like grittiness. And so dad is Andrew Warhola, and he would have been a coal miner. And mom is Julia.
Classic.
Classic. And classic Pennsylvania. Mom is Julia Warhola. And right off the bat, I just want to say, like, we fucking love mom. Okay. Mom okay. was super artsy. She loved to sing and dance and draw. And she made money by cleaning houses. But she also would make these, like, little bouquets out of paper and go door to door selling them.
That's nice.
Yeah. Oh, she's crafty. And she's super supportive and loving. So Andrew Warhola Jr. is born August 6, 1928. So he's a fiery, loyal, ambitious, stubborn Leo. Yeah. So this is from
Obvious
Leo. So this is from Allure magazine to help equate you with what that means. I love this.
I like these.
Roll out the red carpet because Leo has arrived. Leo is represented by the lion. And this and these spirited fire signs are vivacious, theatrical, and passionate. Leos love to bask in the spotlight and celebrate themselves. Playful Leos have no problem leaning into drama-fueled romances that are perfectly suited for tabloids. After all, every Leo perceives him or herself as a celebrity. Yes.
Oh, yeah. Both of my parents are Leos.
Yeah.
Hence why they're not together. They both married lovely water signs.
Yeah, there's definitely like the
power struggle. Mm-hmm. For sure.
But this really rings true for our dear Andy, and we'll get into why. So he's the youngest of three brothers.
Oh, boy.
And as a kid, he had a hard time. He had a lot of feelings, which, you know, feelings in children have only, like, recently been... okay.
Approved.
Yeah, approved. Children are now allowed to have feelings. Back in the day, really not allowed to have feelings. And he was painfully shy, so much to the point where he wouldn't even go into rooms if, like, his family was in there. Too much to be around the whole family. And so he's instantly spotted as being different. And he had a hard time relating to other kids. He was bullied. But it was also bad, and that has largely to do with mom. So mom knew Andy was different, but she really finds a way to cultivate his interests. And she holds these drawing competitions for him and his brothers. And she'd be like, okay, whoever's the best drawing gets a chocolate bar. And apparently Andy would always win. He always had the best drawings. And him and mom are very, very close. And you're not going to like this part, but go there anyway.
Really?
Mom's deeply religious. Which wasn't uncommon for the time. Well,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah, that's okay.
But she's like hardcore Catholic.
Okay.
And would take him to Vespers, which Vespers is like a nighttime mass on Saturdays, I'm pretty sure. And then she would take him to three back-to-back-to-back masses on Sunday.
So let's make this the most boring... for a child. Oh yeah, they're really gonna like that. They're gonna love that.
So much church.
Oh my god.
But you'll be surprised to know that Andy Warhol is actually religious his entire life. He was a Catholic and he like keeps it up. So I don't know, maybe it has to do with the whole like I need to get into heaven thing. Maybe he was just traumatized when he was a kid. Maybe he just really believed in it. Who knows? But the cool thing about this is that it was a Byzantine Catholic church. So it's covered fucking every inch of it with artwork.
Oh, hell yeah.
Yeah, so Byzantine art, guys, it comes from the Middle Ages, which would be like pre-Renaissance, post-fall of the Roman Empire.
The Age of Faith.
The Age of Faith. And it kind of is like more two-dimensional image of all your Bible superstars. You got Mary, you got Jesus, you got Michael, you got hella saints, and they typically will all have like a gold halo that surrounds the back of their head.
Yeah.
So there's like these iconic images. There's lots of symbolism. But you can already see where I'm going with this. iconic images of people. These it's thought that
flatness is okay.
Flatness is okay.
Illusion kind of depth. Like, fucking who cares? Bye-bye.
Yeah, but adios. But yeah, so this is kind of like his first like influence and first introduction into art. Because what else is gonna kid gonna do in church? I mean, you're not there to learn.
Yeah, at least like, you can look at cool stuff. Yeah, yeah,
you look at the stuff. You listen to the songs. Maybe you like to sing. I don't know, but
yeah,
do something. So things are going okay, but then at 8 years old, he gets St. Vitus's dance.
Oh,
and this thing is fucking horrible. It's a rheumatic fever, like scarlet fever, and it causes involuntary movements in your arms and legs.
Oh, yeah.
So you're like hella jerky and you make like contorted faces and you're not in control of your body.
Oh.
And it also causes issues with blotchiness on your skin. So he has all these scars and pigmentation issues and loses his hair and it messes with the pigmentation in his hair. So that's why he has like that almost albino.
I thought that was a look. I didn't know it was a look too,
but it's part of it. So we'll get into the Andy Warhol look.
Yeah,
Yeah. So this is kind of where it starts, and you know, already was having a hard time.
Yeah, like really, you gotta throw this on top of it.
Fuck, like out of all the kids to get this. So his mom set up a quarantine area in their dining room for him, and all day long he would spend time stuck in there recovering in his room making drawings. She would make his brothers bring him magazines, and he loved and collected headshots of celebrities and loved looking at the images in the magazines.
Uh-huh.
And he would hyper fixate on them and post headshots of celebrities like all over the walls, and he was super obsessive about them. And so his first really like learnings and understandings of art and influence also come from looking at these images in these magazines, which translates just so well into his work, you know, later on. He does make a recovery from this, but afterwards his body's super sensitive to touch, and he's really just described as being sort of fragile and sensitive. And so like his brothers would be out playing sports and he's like, dude, fuck that. I don't want to draw. Like, I'm not interested.
Oh yeah, no, I feel that.
Yeah. And so I don't think it's going to come as a huge surprise here, but it's thought that Andy Warhol was autistic. And I've talked about a little bit about myself, my husband, and my son all being autistic. So the story speaks to me in a lot of ways that I can relate to. And autism is a spectrum, meaning there's like not one definition that really perfectly explains what it means to everyone that is autistic. It's not a disease. It doesn't have symptoms.
Yeah.
It's a disability. It's a difference in your neuro thinking. And people sometimes default to saying high functioning or low functioning, but that really is just dismissive in a lot of ways, because it reduces people down to being perceived as either like good and acceptable or bad and less acceptable.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's not so bad being high functioning, which also simultaneously like diminishes the struggles that those people have too. So
for sure.
Just a little tidbit there as we get to
know. No, that's
other,
good to know.
Everybody.
Yeah, no, that's so good to know.
Yeah, and I think, you know, more and more people are discovering that they are autistic as, you know, we learn more about it.
Yeah.
For me, it means that I have to wear the same pair of socks, and that when I first hear a song that I like, I might listen to it like 100 times in a row.
150 times. Yeah.
And there's other things there too. But so Andy did have maybe less support needs than some, but his neurospiciness was a struggle for him all the same. So a few things just to say about what I think autism is for Andy. He loved repetition, which I know.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah. Printmaker.
He had just a different way of looking at the world and could really appreciate it at a micro and macro level, like looking at a building for hours to study it, or collecting endless amounts of cookie jars, or
that just sounds like an artist, though. Yeah,
and like, a lot of artists I think are autistic
for sure. I'm like, oh, interesting connection. That just sounds like a cookie artist. Okay,
yeah. Well, and I think, you know, art really is just like a different way to communicate what you're trying to say, right?
Yeah,
and I think that form of like expressing yourself is easier to access sometimes for autistic people.
Yeah, because language is limiting.
And it's hard for me sometimes with language too. Sometimes I have to listen to things sometimes a few times before I can actually like understand what is trying to be told to me.
Yeah.
And he had a difficult time understanding like the nuances of communication, which happens, you know, like somebody will say a joke and it's like, what? Or, or saying something that like is blunt, like just honest, and somebody will be offended. Yeah. And it's like, I'm just being honest.
Why
like,
are you being so blunt with me right now? Are you mad?
Yeah. And it's like, no, I'm not mad. And I'm just like telling you how I feel. Like, I didn't know I couldn't do that. Shit. Sorry. I'm
like, no, but you have to do it in a very sweet sing-songy way for me to be able to process it.
Oh my God. One time a friend of mine in college got really mad because she was telling me a story and I was trying to relate to her. So I told her like, oh yeah, this thing happened to me that like is the same thing that happened to you, you know, like trying to relate to her, like, oh yeah, that reminds me of this one time. Yeah. And she was so offended by that. How dare you make this about you? And I was like, I'm not, wait, what just happened? Like, I'm not making it about me. I don't understand. Like, so, you know, like those kind of nuances, I think would have been challenging for him too.
Yeah.
And he hyper fixates on art and celebrities and have an obsession with art. Like he has to make it.
Okay.
And also emotional dysregulation, hypersensitivity to touch. And sometimes he's perceived as being like uncaring or having a lack of empathy or being robotic.
Okay.
And all these attributes he had made him both incredibly successful, but were also really difficult for him throughout his life, especially in the beginning.
Mm.
So I think it's a important part of his story might shed some light as to some of his like behavioral differences, why he is the way he is, and give us that perspective when we go through the rest of this, because some of the stuff can seem kind of fucked up, but So his mom gets him some art lessons at Carnegie Museum of Art after he gets better and he's finally loving life again. And then fucking life just has to kick him in the nads. He's trotting along through school, though he fucking hates it. Like all of our artist babies so far. I think every artist hated school except for Rubens.
Except for fucking Rubens, who was just a little different.
Rubens just like was like, life is so easy.
Yeah, it was just so easy for him.
But yeah, so and then shit hits the fan again. So his dad's off on a coal mine working and all the coal miners are drinking out of this river that they don't realize is contaminated.
Okay.
And his coworkers all survive, but he's unable to pull out and dies. And he was 13. God.
Oh.
Yeah. Dad. And so when he fucking dies, his last words to his son were like, I put money aside for Andy to go to art school. Like that kid's going to be something. Make sure that money like is set aside for Andy.
Aww,
I dad. Know.
Stop. Oh my God, a supportive parent.
Supporting
his
art. Oh my
God. Okay, well, that's cool. That's awesome.
Yeah, that's awesome. But you know what's not awesome? Fucking Byzantine Catholic cultures.
Oh God.
They, part of their, sorry, I forget what this is called, but they like lay the body out for a few days in the home.
Oh, yeah,
lay his dad out in the dining room on the dining table and he's like fucking mortified. Hides upstairs in his room under his bed for 3 days and is uncontrollably crying and sobbing. just up there in his room.
Well, that's just fucking weird, man. I don't know. You guys,
why do you have a dead body?
You have your dad's dead body in your house like that? It's like laying around on the table? Like, I would be crying under the bed too, man. That's fucked up.
That just makes me think of Gone with the Wind when the daughter dies. Oh my God. That.
And then, yeah. No. I'm good.
No, I'm good.
Put me somewhere. So,
well, we already talked about what we're doing with your body. You want to be taxidermied, which is like,
with like taxidermy with like a fucking white claw on my hand. Oh my God.
We'll just make a polar cast.
I'm down. Yeah. You just get creative. Get creative. Hey, do you?
So then at 15, his mom gets colon cancer.
Oh my God. Okay.
Don't worry. She doesn't die. But she does have to have surgery and she's out for a few weeks. And every day while she's out, his brother's taking care of him. And guess what he eats every day?
Oh.
A cheese sandwich and Campbell's soup.
Okay.
Yeah. So all of this is really setting the stage for the Andy that we love hate,
for
right?
Sure.
We got iconic imagery, we got symbolism, we got silver screen obsession, we got soup, we got commodities being introduced, and we have death and dying. So Andy does go to college with the money dad sets aside. He goes to Carnegie Tech Hall. Of course, the work is fucking cool that comes out of this time. And there's a shit ton of work, you guys. So it's important to highlight that I'm not going to have enough time to get to everything. Some has to get left out. This guy made fucking thousands upon thousands of drawings and paintings and sculptures and things. There's not going to be enough time.
For sure.
But I will post all of the stuff to baroque.b.podcast. So go on our Instagram, go check it out.
Follow us. It's really funny, you guys.
Yeah. Shameless self-promotion. Look up Living Room 1948.
Okay.
Yeah. So this is an example of the work at the time.
All right.
Yeah. So it's got like that Cezanne-y thing going on where it's like things like the picture plane's a little flattened.
Oh, I see the crucifix on the mantle.
The crucifix is there. This is supposed to be his I'm pouring beer. This is supposed to be his living room in Pittsburgh. So
it does look like a Pittsburgh living room.
Right. So the furniture here is wobbly. It's pretty cool. It's kind of got like some Monterey Toulouse-Lautrec vibes going on.
For sure.
But he also learns this technique while he's in school called the blotted line technique. And this is a sort of like monotype situation. And a monotype is just a way to make a print. Like you typically will paint onto a surface something that's not absorbent, like a piece of plexiglass, and then throw a paper on top of it, rub it on the back, and then boom, you got a print. It's just one time.
Yeah.
Mono.
That was the only kind of printmaking I really liked, I think.
Because you can paint.
It was easier.
And you can make a
etching.
Shit ton of stuff, and it's not too much mess because you only have to clean up one plate.
I like it too.
And you have to be quick about it. It's not precious, you know. Mm-hmm. You can churn and burn. So this blotted line technique really carries through his work for a while, and college gives him this, but college also makes him aware that shit's going on outside of Pittsburgh, which he's like, I gotta get the fuck out of here. This is not me. I need to go see the world. And, you know, I firmly believe, get yourself out there, guys. Go see some shit.
Yeah.
Go around.
If you can.
If you can. Even our shy Andy guy can do it. So you can too. You got this. We love you. So Andy is armed with $200 in his pocket, this blotted line technique, and he goes off to New York. So he wants to be famous. He is like, I don't just want to be your run-of-the-mill famous. I want to be like everyone will fucking know me forever famous. Like,
okay.
Super, like, just
manifest it.
Yeah. So the year he moves to New York would have been the same year that that article about Jackson Pollock in Life magazine comes out, you know, where he's like in this big spread.
Yeah, like, where it's like, is this the best artist, that kind of thing. That yeah.
Ever lived. Yeah, and so Andy sees that and already he's like, this is going to happen.
Damn,
this
I got
is
already this.
Happening for him. Like, this is going to happen for me. Cool. But, I mean, we're also in the time of abstract expressionism.
Yeah.
You know, we've got manliness in the art world.
Show.
Willem de Kooning, Jack Pollock, Mark Rothko. Those are the all-stars right now.
Yeah.
Hyper-masculine, binge drinking, angry, rough around the edges, tough dudes, right?
Yeah, this is American freedom right here.
We're not going to make objective art. We're just going to do whatever we want.
Yeah, splatter paint on the canvas. Come.
I'm angry. And he's like, yeah, I'm not doing this. I like drawing flowers and I like, yeah. You know, drawing. Like, yeah, so instead of pioneering, like, and I admire this about him. Like, instead of trying to be something he's not, he's just so, I don't want to, not in the beginning, like, unapologetically, but he's not ever able to, like, to not be himself. You
For
know,
sure.
He can't figure out how to, like, emulate somebody else. He's so himself.
Yeah. And
yeah, because he's like, you know, I'm not going to fit into this group. So for now, I'm going to do the commercial artist thing and be an illustrator.
Cool.
So when he gets to New York, he's still going through a discovery phase as far as, like, the aesthetic of, like, who he is.
Mm-hmm.
He hasn't found that style yet. And so look up Andy Warhol in the 1950s, and you'll get an idea of what he looks like. People describe him as being an alien, mostly because of his personality. Okay. He sort of has this, like, classic professor look.
Oh,
going
yeah.
On.
He's kind of, like, nerdy.
Yeah, like, an iconic nerd. Like, yeah. a tight suit.
Little glasses.
Thick, rounded glasses. A bow tie.
A bow tie. I was going to say the bow tie is hella cute.
Yeah.
No, like, this is,
adorable.
Like, a hipster right now.
Yeah, no. He's so on trend. And yeah. He's not bad looking. I think
no,
he's kind of hot.
He's cute.
But he's, like, lanky and awkward.
Yeah.
And he's interpreted as being cold and unfeeling in his reaction to people. He had a breathy way of talking, which if you've ever heard an interview with him, you'll notice.
Yeah.
And he's apparently just, like, so self-conscious, even to the point, like, he does get a nose job and has skin sanding done to try and make himself feel better about his appearance.
Wow.
I know.
Skin sanding.
I know.
Girl.
And I feel bad because he's, like, hot. He just doesn't know how hot he is. But I feel
yeah.
like in,
like,
your 20s, you never know how hot you are.
Yeah.
And then you're in your 30s and you're like, damn, I was so hot. But we're still hot, so whatever.
Oh, my God. Yeah, I think we, like, grew into it, honestly.
Yeah. So he gets a job at Glamour magazine.
Ooh.
Doing illustrations for an article called Success is a Job in New York.
Oh.
And, like, being successful is a job in New York, I think, you know, you get it.
Yeah.
You get it. In September of 1949, an issue of his drawings are published, and they make a mistake in his name, leaving out the A.
Oh.
And thus, Andy Warhol
Boom.
Is born.
Boom. It's better. It's better.
It is better, right?
It's better.
It's so good.
Yeah.
So he's starts on what becomes a 10-year career as a commercial artist, and he becomes the it guy for commercial art. Like, and his they're super cute drawings. Like, he kind of has a sensibility of that awkward, quote unquote, bad drawing.
Yeah,
know?
Yeah.
But they're really good.
They're
and
honestly like nowadays they would be called, like, kawaii. Like,
yeah.
The cute, it's almost like cute little anime characters or something.
I don't know about that. Let me give you, so look up Warhol shoes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And, I mean, and he loves print. So I think that he, like, print really speaks to him.
Yeah.
He wants to be famous. And print implies that things are going to be seen by more than one person.
Yeah.
And in this medium, they're going to be seen by thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of people, right?
Yeah.
So I think it's really smart for him to pick this as his first move of like, I'm going to be a commercial artist. He makes these shoes and then he does, they sort of look like a cross between like 101 Dalmatians, the original one, and Egon Schiele. Oh, that's like the vibe that I get. There's the same sensibility there. It's somehow Art Nouveau meets Victorian meets like contour drawings.
Yeah. They're kind of old fashioned.
A little bit. Yeah. Like they're very crude. Of the time. Right. Right.
But like cute and fun.
But like cute. Yeah. And fun. So he's killing it. And meanwhile, mom is like so scared for Andy in the big city. She sells the house, gets up all of her belongings and knocks on his door one day and is like, hi, I'm here. I live with you now.
Okay, mom. Yeah. Mom.
Oh, yeah, I don't even know what I would do. Oh, my God. But this turns out to actually, like, be a really good move because Andy is obsessed with making work. He's often quoted saying things like, I think rest is a waste of time, like sleeping's a waste of time. He just wants to make art. That's all he wants to do morning, noon, and night. So it's nice that she comes because she can, like, clean the house and make him food and, like, do all the shit he feels like he doesn't have time for, you know?
Sure. Okay, come and take care of you.
That's yeah, nice. and he actually incorporates her into the work. So while he's making art for his job on the side, he has this intent to still break into the fine art world. And he's trying to get into it in all these different ways. He's constantly carrying around a portfolio of his work that he keeps in a brown paper bag, which I love.
Okay.
So unassuming. He just keeps it in a brown paper bag. He can't be bothered with what it's being presented in. It's like, no, I just got to make it and show it to people as quick as possible. And then he also offers to do portraits of people, which, I mean, have you ever offered to do a portrait of somebody? People love that shit.
Yeah.
It's like super fun. I'm
like, hold on.
Like,
let me
make me side? Into a drawing?
Yeah. Like, no, it's so much fun. I was just talking to this with one of my students on Saturday of what happens all the time with portraits of loved ones is that they always find the worst photographic references.
Right.
And it's like, have you asked her for a reference? And they're like, no, I don't want to bother anybody with like my
art stuff. Oh my God, they love stuff. That and I'm like, shit.
Dude, like you can fully ask her if she's still around and near you, like ask her. She'll be like, oh, my God, well, what do you need? Anything you need? let me give you a better picture. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Can I come over so you can photograph me? Like
100%.
And I'm like, dude, like, they love this shit, dude. Like,
yeah,
they would love to give you a better picture than whatever the fuck this is.
It's so flattering. Like, why wouldn't somebody want? And if you're going to paint them. I would think they'd want some control over what you're painting. Like, they want to make sure it's a good picture.
Let me make sure it's a good picture, not some random thing you found online.
Well, and he carries this throughout his career of making portraits of people. I mean, I'm sure that's not surprising. But so he also makes these little books as gifts for people, and it would have been like a set of illustrations in a book format. So there's one, look it up, it's called Wild Raspberries, and it's sort of a cookbook that has these cool drawings of cakes and desserts and a pig dinner, things like that. And he has his mom write in this sort of whimsy handwriting the instructions.
It's giving his like mom, Dr. Seuss almost.
It's like Kurt Vonnegut sort of actually.
Like the pig. It's like a pig.
I like the pig too.
It's so cute.
Actually, and look up In the Bottom of My Garden. That one's cool too. There's like a bunch of angels 69ing.
Oh.
Old cherubs.
Oh my goodness.
But yeah, so you see the sort of like contour use that I was talking about, like Egon Schiele. Like,
yeah. They're really cute.
Yeah, and there's this nice bridge created between like masculine and feminine that does develop. You know, a male appreciating.
I just saw the ones where they're 69. They're hella cute. They're like flopping on each other.
Like little chubby cherubs.
They're hella chubby.
They're so cute. I love it. I love them too. They're really cute. I think you can buy them in a like in a little book. I think that they are. I might be mistaken.
That they're printed.
Yeah, that they're printed.
Yeah.
But yeah, so it's definitely different. It's a male appreciating and utilizing elements that are socialized to be female. So, you know, lipsticks, cakes, flowers, cats, butterflies.
Yeah.
Also, dudes making out. You know, things like that. And all these kind of hot, studly dudes doing like hot, studly things. So, yeah. So, pop art. Let's talk about pop art.
Pop.
Pop. Pop, pop, pop. So pop is this movement that happens post-abstract expressionism, post-World War II, and its main focus and subject matter is distinctly popular culture. Mm. Pop, popular culture, pop, you
popular,
get it.
Popular.
Popular. Well, so a lot of the work involves commercialism and consumerism in some aspect and uses common day objects, advertising, politics as its content. So a lot of artists do this in different ways. And Andy Warhol is definitely considered a pop artist. Pop. But not at first, though. So let's get into why this guy is so exceptional and set apart from the rest of his what you would call coworkers.
Oh.
You know, the people that you're sort of forced to be around for 8 hours a day. And you're like, why do I have to be around you for 8 hours a day? But unless it was like working at the pizza shop in San Francisco. Love you guys. Miss you. That was fun.
Yeah, you can tell that it's like, you guys aren't really working. Partying back there.
Yeah, that was fun.
What havoc is this? You just go in there and it's like, oh, you guys are all high.
What are you talking about? What are you talking about?
Just give me a slice, dude. Like, stop. Let me go.
Dude, that was the best job. So
Raquel over here with like, dude, you don't have a bra. Like, no wonder everybody likes your pizza. People are just lining up. See a taste.
Oh my god.
Oh my god.
Listen, I miss those boobs. Those were nice boobs back then. I would still be fond of
them. Oh my god, they're so nice.
Two kids later. They are still nice, though, yeah. For the book. For the record.
For the record.
They are still nice. Hell it's yeah. Just like, I saw a picture. I was like, damn, boobs in your 20s are so nice.
They're just up there hanging out.
Now I put a bra on most of the time. Mm. But so... so the art world does start like aesthetically shifting towards being in his wheelhouse. Jasper Johns has his first exhibition in New York at Leo Castelli's gallery in 1958. And Jasper Johns is the one who paints the American flags.
American flag guy.
Yeah. He does other things, but like American flag guy. And people like eat this shit up.
And there's a Target.
Yeah.
Is it a Target?
And then Mark Rauschenberg, who's Jasper Johns' lover, he also is a huge hit. He's the one that does paintings that have sculptures coming out of them sometimes.
Yeah, taxidermy. And he also
found objects, collages, sculptural elements in the work, like a newer version of Marcel Duchamp, kind of writing and collaging. And then there's Lichtenstein. He's the one that made the cartoons in art, like a comic book art. So these are the dudes that are happening. Then they're coming up. Mm-hmm. And Annie knows something's happening. And this is it. This is going to be the time This is me. Uh-huh. I feel it. But he just has a really hard time breaking into it. And I think a lot of that has to do with him being gay and also people not taking him seriously because he has a commercial art background. So being gay at this time would have been a huge fucking no-no.
Right.
Even the gays didn't want people to know that they were gay. Like and so he's rejected a shit ton because he can never hide and mask that he's gay. Mm-hmm. So it's always out there. It's very evident in just the way he carries himself.
Yeah.
And the art that he's making. There's not really a shame dialogue that happens for him. He's not ashamed of the gay thing. I think it's more just like, I am who I am here, and I'm more worried about my skin and my nose, but being gay is okay.
Yeah.
A few things sort of happen that lead to our iconic Andy, and it all has to do with rejection. So he gets rejected by Jasper Johns and Rauschenberg for being, quote unquote, too swish, which means like he was too gay. Oh. Like they didn't want anybody to know that they were gay.
Whatever.
I know.
You're fucking each other.
You're too gay. Like, okay, sorry. You can't be that much more gay than that. Fuck, man. Fuck those guys. But it just is, it does show you how serious it was for him to be like outwardly openly gay at the time.
Presenting. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It was like, you know, very
frowned upon. Even in New York, even with the like the cool stuff coming up, the progressiveness.
You would always think there would be like a safe haven in New York, but not at this time.
The New York art scene, really?
Wow. So we gotta remember the New York art scene at this time is like repressed Jackson Pollock types.
Manly
and now this
guys.
Shit. Now this shit where he's like, oh,
that
finally,
are all
people.
Secretly gay anyway.
I know. And then he's like really not getting it. He's like, why don't they like me? I don't understand. And it's really fucked up and sad. It makes me mad at Jasper Johns and Rauschenberg. But he also does this other thing where he becomes obsessed with Truman Capote. Okay. So Truman Capote publishes this book. He's the one that did In Cold Blood. That's like famous. But he publishes this book, Other Voices, Other Rooms. And there's this photo of him on the back. Dude, look it up. And you'll see the photo and you'll get it. Because Truman Capote is like super fine.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And he's like looking like, come get it. Get it.
Oh, my God.
And Truman Capote he has verbal power. You know, he has the power of words and he's charismatic. People love him. And so he gets obsessed with Truman Capote, though. Oh. And Truman Capote's like, dude, this is too much. Like, he sort of stalks him and, like, writes him letters and leaves him notes. And it freaks Truman Capote out. Like, he's like, no, like, I can't. Like, this is too much. So he does come out a little too strong there, which I get. I don't really blame him. But and then he also makes a bunch of work about gay interactions that are rejected by galleries. So lots of dudes make it out, sometimes like contour drawings of hand jobs.
Oh,
things like that.
Yeah.
Like he's going for it when nobody else is going there. Like he's going there. Yeah, no, I'm all about it, but it's getting rejected. So, and then he also has his first few sexual encounters, which ultimately end in rejection because he's so self-conscious of his looks.
Oh.
So lots of just back-to-back rejection and struggling with self-acceptance.
Okay. Yeah. That's sad.
It sucks, but I mean, we all kind of have those moments where we're not able to accept ourselves for whatever reason.
Oh, for sure. Sometimes every day.
Sometimes I'm still there.
Yeah,
for sure.
For sure.
Yeah.
We get it.
But so he does have this quote, and you're going to like this. So I was walking in Bali, and I saw a bunch of people in a clearing having a ball because somebody they really liked had just died. And I realized that everything was just how you decide to think about it. Sometimes people let the same problems make themselves miserable for years when they should just say, so what? That's one of my favorite things to say, so what? I don't know how I made it through all those years before I learned to do that trick. It took a long time for me to learn it, but once you do, you never forget.
Oh, That's awesome.
So, guys, just remember, so what? So what? So this is now, you know, where we see the Andy we know, love, hate today emerge. And Gone are the days of awkward Andy. And we now start to see the image that we know.
Icon.
Formulate. Yeah.
Yeah.
He starts, like, giving up trying to appease neuronormative nuances. He starts saying things that sound just, like, off the wall, cold as ice. And he says whatever the fuck he wants. And, You know, he's like, gone are the days of my plain Jane. Like, who was that?
I don't know.
Like, who the fuck was that? I'm going to be Andy motherfucking Warhol, motherfucker.
Yeah.
And I'm going to master the world by just not giving a fuck. So cool. Watch out. So Andy's signature look, typically all black, a wig that is either blonde or silver on top with darker hair on the bottom. And you remember bringing that look back in 2005?
Oh,
there were
a
bunch of girls doing that.
The black at the bottom.
The skunk look. But Andy fucking rocks it.
Yeah.
He's like a timeless look.
Oh, that's going to come back too. I can feel it.
I hope so.
Yeah.
It's a really good look.
It's actually
not for
cool.
me.
Yeah.
I don't have the face for it. I've got too big of a jaw.
I just think I tried to do blonde and it just never, it's not going to, it's not
work.
Cute.
It's
so much work. Fucking work.
Get a wig. Well, yeah, he was balding too. So yeah. Like, that's why the wig gets introduced. So, So this is sort of his look moving forward. And he knew this was tactful. Like, he knew that famous people have a look, and he wanted to be recognizable everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
The pop art paintings that fuck your shit up. That's where we're going with this.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody knows the Marilyn Monroe's, the Liz Taylor's, the Campbell soup.
Mm-hmm.
It's time. So
let's do it. Let's eat some soup.
Yeah. So he does start just like doing paintings of everyday objects, all these different commodities. In a gallery, this is the story. He paints a Coke bottle, one that's super painterly and the other that the painterliness is removed and it sort of has that print image that we know.
Yeah.
That's just black and white and that's it. And he asks his friend, who's a gallerist, like, which one do you like more? And he's like, well, I like the one without the painterliness to it. And everyone agrees that's it. And so that's it moving forward. But he does ask, like, is it a painting? Is it still a painting if it doesn't look like a painting?
Mm-hmm. Oh, good question. I don't know.
Yeah. It's a good question.
I'm still trying to figure that out.
So Andy first starts making silk screens from drawings and paintings. And then he figures out that you can actually make a photo type silk screen with a photo.
Mm-hmm.
And he really is the one to make silk screening high art.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's the one that brings that into the art
not
world. Not just for t-shirts. Yeah. And so let's talk about Marilyn. So the crazy thing that I didn't know about the Marilyn portraits, and maybe everybody knows this, but he actually made these the day after she died.
Mm.
So he had the timing down.
Yeah.
He knew, I mean, this famous, beloved actress commits suicide and the whole world is watching.
Mm-hmm.
So he knew that the power of
maybe
that portrait.
Maybe commits, maybe.
Right. Well, he knew scandal.
Yeah.
Like, he knew that there was scandal there and he likes scandal. He's drawn to it.
And that's American pop culture. Marilyn, our beloved, dies.
We love it.
Everybody
loves it. Yeah. Everybody's drawn to it. And, you know, like a moth to a flame, right?
Mm-hmm.
And a portrait historically and modern day stamps people into time.
Mm.
And the power of his medium working with this idea is just endless because a print can be made over and over and over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
But the image with a silk screen, every time you print with it, changes a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
The ink gets clogged into the screen. The image then gets worn through and less recognizable, more distorted. It's repeatedly used until it's almost no good anymore.
Yeah.
Faded. gone forever. Like the commodity of the person in the image. And she's also this massive object of desire. Mm-hmm. So you can pick which one you want of her. Do you like the blue one? Do you like the red one? Do you like the pink one?
Wow.
It's like an ice cream shop of picking which one you want.
Yeah.
Like picking a flavor of fucking Campbell's soup, right?
Damn.
Yeah. And the repetition of it speaks to the stills from the movies and to what is happening to the subjects at these big moments in time. There's so many places you could go with it. You could just keep going with it forever. Yeah. And so he does this with so, so many, many people. Liz Taylor, Jackie O, Elvis, all these people become like behind their silver screen images are people. And he reminds us of that, to stop and think about them. To remember them, not just being these icons that they were.
Yeah.
You know.
They're not a soup can.
They're not a soup can. They do have imperfections.
Yeah.
Even if they're being like mass produced.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's going to be a little human in there when it comes to the process of the human error in the process.
Exactly. Oh. You get it.
What about the stealing of people's images, though?
So we're
cycling there. We'll cycle back.
We'll cycle back. But you mean like taking other people's photography? Like,
yeah. The appropriating of people's stuff. Marlboro.
Yeah. I mean, he does it time and time again. And I think like, so there's a few different ways to think about it, but one thing I read that I really liked is like Andy wants to bring everybody into the art world.
And
he knows that if everybody's going to come into the art world, he has to make it accessible for everybody and put up images that they can access and understand easily.
Yeah.
So it's like putting these images that do offer comfort, a sense of belonging, a sense of inclusion, something that people can all get together and recognize.
I think that's the thing with the pop art movement is that it's popular. It's
popular.
It's what we all know. We know Marilyn, even if haven't even seen a movie, you should watch her movies. They're really crazy.
Yeah, they're good,
but even if we haven't watched a movie or know nothing about this person or haven't opened that Playboy, like we know who she is somehow still.
Yeah. I know quite a bit about her because I went down the famous, like the obsession route with her.
Oh.
I really did. There was like a theory she had a sixth toe.
Oh.
Yeah. And some of the images you can like see it.
Oh.
There's all
she deserves an episode for sure.
Yeah, she does.
For sure. Norma Jean. Norma.
Norma Jean, right? So the soup. So I mean, like, you know, like we said, everybody kind of has a memory with Campbell's soup in America. Maybe not now. I'm sort of exiting the, you know, toxic food out of my household.
Get the organic version.
I do. But even, you know,
Annie's.
Even when I'm feeling sick, though, it's all – I'm like, no, it's medicine.
It's
got to
be Campbell's soup.
Like, it is medicinal in some
way. It is, yeah.
So it is like the epitome of comfort. And Andy had a lot of those same memories, and it had that loaded meaning for him too. So it makes perfect sense that this would be an iconic image that he uses.
Mm.
And, you know, like we said, it's recognizable. Everybody knows it. You don't have to think about it. You walk into a gallery, you see it, and you immediately understand. You don't have to be educated. You can come just as you are, which I think is super strong message. And so he makes every single flavor in hand-painted image and gets a big fucking show in Los Angeles. Finally, somebody gets it.
Mm.
And it's his first solo exhibition. It flops. People fucking hated the suit.
They didn't like the suit. They didn't get it.
They didn't like the Marilyns. They didn't like the Liz Taylors. They didn't like the Elvises. They didn't like the soup cans.
Oh my God.
Fucking They don't get it.
They don't get it. Do you know how many fucking LA galleries have a soup can?
Oh my God.
Like, they love the soup now, but they didn't get it back then. Oh my God. Fucking, how annoying.
I know. So annoying. And what's worse, to add insult to injury, is there's like another gallery down the street and they put a display of Campbell's soup cans in the window and say, buy it for cheaper here.
I guess.
Fuckers.
Ew. Like, what? Go really, get a hobby. Really? Why are you so obsessed with me?
Like, what the fuck? Is that so fucked? That makes me so mad.
That's horrible.
I know.
Sorry you don't get
it. Sorry you don't get it. So, the factory. Well, yeah. So, we're going to keep going. I'm going to move on from the work a little bit. I'm going to pass through a lot of the work. And we're going to go into more of the personal details since we're here for the gossip. So the factory. So the whole art thing is not going too well, but Andy is sort of thriving otherwise. Andy is like, okay, if there's not a space for me, I'm just going to fucking make my own space. Like, fuck all of you. And I'm just going to cultivate it. I'm going to cultivate you know, whatever I want. There is not a space for me in the art world. I'm going to make it for myself. So, I mean, listen, it wears on him that he's being rejected, but some people are catching on and believe in him. And he does have a massive network of friends and like a friend family, essentially.
Yeah.
And this would have been made, this friend family would have been made up of like literally every type of person we would have been hanging out in San Francisco with.
Yeah.
Less heroin, maybe, but like still. Mine is the hard drugs. Yeah. Like, but so Andy starts working in a huge warehouse to make work in, and it attracts literally all types of people. Everybody's welcome there. Drag queens, gay men, trans people, sex workers, liberal artsy, wandering actresses, all different types of people who are trying to make it in New York. But also like waspy, uppity people too, like your Fifth Avenue, you know, stockbroker type people who want to see what is in,
want the culture.
What is in the depths of the night.
Oh.
Yeah. And this place sounds fucking wild. Just so many drugs, drinking, nightlife, making art, party.
Bacchus.
And Bacchus. Bacchus. And this is really where his personality's flame just blow the fuck up. Like, he gets so famous. Everybody who's anybody is there. But he does get a lot of criticism because he's using these people as inspiration for the work. He starts making films.
Yeah, doesn't he do the videos at this point? These like long-ass videos.
Yes, he's making videos at this point. I remember
these weird videos.
Yeah, and there's so many, but I guess to give you guys a sense of like the videos, there's one called Blowjob. And it's just a video of a guy's face while he's getting a blowjob.
Oh, wow.
So you can't see the blowjob, but you can see his face and you understand that it's a blowjob.
You get it.
Yeah. So this stuff would have been fucking outrageous for the time to see that. And so I understand why it's difficult for people to like hop on the bandwagon right away. And because Andy wasn't really like partaking in hard drug party life, he does have a light diet pill addiction that had some methamphetamines in it, and he would party from time to time, but he's not like full blown off the wall, which you really can't be if you're gonna be that successful, you know, like you have to stay the course, you have to kind of remain most people.
Yeah, I mean, a little bit of meth will probably keep you pretty prolific.
Yeah, that's essentially what he's doing. He's just doing a little bit of meth. A little bit of meth.
You should be doing any kind of anything like that.
But some people interpret this as him like abusing other people, like a Jerry Springer, Maury Povich situation, you know?
Yeah, like exploiting them.
Like exploiting them, but I really don't think that's what it is in my interpretation. And here's why. So he makes a series of silkscreen prints called Death and Disaster, and they are of like top headlines that were fucking horrible at the time, like people dying, riots, people getting shot, the electric care, car crashes. And so it's stuff that is like shocking. It's really shock art at this point.
Oh, yeah. Like car accidents. distance and stuff.
Yeah. But listen to this quote, and I think it'll give us some understanding of why he's taking these, like, shocking images and shocking people. So, I thought people should think about them sometime. The girl who jumped off the Empire State Building, or the ladies who ate the poisoned tuna fish, and the people getting killed in car crashes. It's not that I feel sorry for them. It's just that people go by and it doesn't really matter to them that someone unknown was killed. So, I thought it would be nice for these unknown people to be remembered by those who ordinarily wouldn't think about them.
Okay. All right. Well, yeah, that's nice. It's like memoriam kind of thing. Even though it's like their most tragic moments.
Well, and I think it also, like, these images would have been in, like, trash tabloids. Like, it's not, you know, New York Times publishing these. Right. It's like the publications that are putting them out there know that they're attracting people for the shock of it.
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, people love serial killer, like, movies and podcasts and things because they're attracted to that, like,
for sure.
Unknown. But yeah. It's like, would there be as many serial killers if you guys weren't as for attracted sure. to these serial killers? Yeah. You know? Like, they're almost sold as a commodity. Mm-hmm. Like, it is, right?
Yeah.
So, and so people, of course, react to the images like, how dare you? Mm-hmm. But then you hear this and you sort of get it, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So he also removes himself as a creator of the work as much as possible. He hires the work out to people to make the work while he oversees it, much like a Masters of the Past.
Yeah.
Like, he's having it made in a factory. Mm-hmm. So it fits the commentary, right?
Yeah.
It's like every detail is intentional. It's not missed. But whenever you see an interview of him and people ask him about the work, he always plays dumb. When asked about a critics ask him, like, some people say these aren't paintings. What do you think? He'll say, I think they're right.
Yeah. Oh.
They're not paintings. You know, I suck. I'm terrible. I'm not a good artist.
Like, this isn't art. Says that.
This isn't art. I agree with them completely. Yeah. Like,
that's kind of funny.
No, it's so funny. It's so badass. And he really removes his personality as much as possible. It's sort of an art piece in itself. Yeah. Like, I am a commodity. This is all a commodity. But he also would ask his friends all the time what he should do. Like, do you think I should paint this or that? Or XYZ. And then he would take some ideas and use them so much to the point where it really pisses some people off. And on June 3rd, 1968, Valerie Solanas is that very person. So Valerie Solanas was an actress and a screenwriter, and she shares her work with Andy and is terrified that he's going to use it for one of his movies and steal her ideas. So she goes into the factory toting a gun, and she shot Andy Warhol.
Yeah.
Yeah. You cannot be this brazenly different without pissing somebody off. I feel like everybody in the 60s and like the 70s was getting shot.
Yeah.
So he was shot several times.
Oh my God.
And had to have hours of surgery. Every single one of his major organs was pierced through. He was proclaimed dead twice.
Oh, my God.
But that's not how he dies. So he survives.
Oh, my God.
And but the next day, Bobby Kennedy gets shot at. And he's like, dude, what the fuck? You stole my headline.
Yeah. Solanas the one that made the Scum Manifesto?
I don't know. I didn't really look that much into her.
Yeah, it's like a hardcore anti-male. It's pretty fucked up. But it's kind of cool, too. It's like the female revolution, that kind of thing. Of just like, well, if they're going to kill us, then we're going to fucking kill them back, bitches. Let's go. And it's just like, okay. Okay, whoa. I'm just like, men are the
You went there. You went there with that.
Let's go. Let's kill them. Are you on board? And people are like, I don't know if I'm totally on board.
I actually, no.
Does
anybody want to buy my stuff?
I get what she's saying, which is like, if they're not going to listen to our peaceful protests, then we have to stop being so peaceful. And it's like,
right.
Well, it's also a felony, though, to kill people. So I don't know if you're going to get too far doing that kind of stuff. Like, I get what you're saying, but in reality, it's still a bad idea.
This is not the best idea you've ever had. Let's go back to the drawing board.
Yeah, let's try a different thing. I get what you're saying. Yeah,
I'm sure Andy probably wasn't going to steal her ideas. It's like a lot of people after he died would be like, oh, yeah, I told him to do that. And it's like,
yeah.
I think a lot of people told him to do a lot of things. And I think it was part of his like way of playing, you know, like, oh, yeah, should I do that? And then like maybe he would, maybe he wouldn't.
Yeah.
But he was in complete control.
Yeah.
Even if you like share an idea with him and he uses it, he's still in complete control.
Yeah.
But yeah, so he gets shot but the cool thing is he gets a get well soon card, and it just shows how many fucking people he knew. Like everybody signed that thing. Bob Dylan, the Rolling Stones. He managed the entire fucking Velvet Underground.
Oh my God.
Like he managed the band.
Yeah.
There's so many things he did. He became friends with so many people. Liz Taylor, Liza Minnelli, Debbie Harry, Basquiat, Keith Haring, John Lennon, Cher, Dennis Hopper. Like he just has like this endless list of friends, you know? But you know,
didn't he like get Basquiat started like in his career?
Totally.
I don't know if you're gonna touch on that later.
No, I mean, there's so much to get to. Basquiat deserves his own, and we'll get there.
For sure.
And so does Keith Haring. Yeah, really, they do.
For sure.
But though, you know, I'm gonna get through the rest of his life because you guys got places to go and people to see. I'm sure. Try and get through it. So at the factory, after he gets shot, there's this guy that works there, Jed Johnson, who he hires, and Jed is like hottie with a body from Sacktown, California. They fall in love because Jed's helping to take care of Andy and nurse him back to health.
Cute.
Yeah. So there's a lot of debate about Andy's sexuality. A lot of people assume he's like asexual because when the media asks him about his love life, he would perpetuate the image of himself. He would like, they would say, like, do you like sex? And he'd be like, no, like I've never had sex. He actually tells an interviewer in 1980 that he was a virgin.
Oh.
And he would have been in his 50s. And certain critics would just gossip and say shit like, if he is having sex, he's probably like a voyeur in it. Like he's jerking off in the corner while other people are having sex. You know, they assume that he's not a sexual being.
Yeah.
And they couldn't wrap their heads around it because of how different he was. But he embraces that. He, like, loves fucking
the
with
mystery.
People. It's his favorite thing.
Yeah. I'm like, figure it out. You want to try to figure out what I do? Go for it.
Yeah.
He's like, oh. Use your imagination.
No, I don't like sex. I don't like anything. I mean, what's a penis? You know? Like, I don't know.
Oh, my God. That's so good.
So, but his friends quoted saying, Billy Name, who was a friend, an ex-lover, and he says, he was the essence of sexuality. It permeated everything. Andy exuded it along with his great artistic creativity. It brought a joy to the whole art world in New York, but his personality was so vulnerable that it became a defense to put up the blank front.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, he acts dumb, like he doesn't know, but he was fucking, dude. He was fucking a lot. So, so I think he did like sex. I think he liked hot young dudes.
Mm.
I think he would have loved West Hollywood.
Hell yeah.
He would have been all about that shit. He loved Studio 54.
Mm.
He would have loved Folsom Street Fair. Like, that would have been his shit. And that's the kind of stuff that's constantly happening at the factory. Like dudes having sex and him videotaping it and taking endless pictures, Polaroids. Like he just is very sexual.
Yeah. And this was the free love time too of like
this was
scooting out of the 50s,
time.
The stuffy Leave It to Beaver 50s.
And yeah. Absolutely.
Exploring.
And so yeah, people are finally embracing like their sexual side.
Yeah.
So when he and Jed fall for each other, they do have a long-term relationship, but typically sex, drugs, and rock and roll don't fit with a healthy home life.
Yeah.
And Jed is like a really sweet person, and he was so innocent. And Andy's over here going to Studio 54, taking methamphetamines and taking pictures of guys' anuses. Like, I don't think it was like hard for Jed Jed to wrap his head around, like, are you being loyal to me? Because I just saw that you took a bunch of pictures of, like, giant penises.
Yeah, I can't necessarily, like, settle down during this time with your partner.
And, I mean, there's at this point, there's no gay marriage. There's no example of domesticated gay life. It's not out there. So even if Andy wanted it, which is thought that he did want, that like to wife up and stuff,
be like, but a domestic situation,
but I just, it's so inconceivable at this point. So they were together for a long time, living together like 12 years I think, and towards the end Jed attempts suicide twice. I know. Jed. And the first time Andy apparently is like really supportive and very much there for him and scared, like, okay, I'll stop going to Studio 54. And then the second time he is like stone cold about it. He calls Jed's brother to come over. And by the time his brother gets there, Andy's gone.
Damn.
So, yeah.
He couldn't handle another one.
I think he just couldn't handle it. Yeah. I think like, you know, I think big emotions are just really arresting for him. And it was just too much. So needless to say, that relationship ends. He immediately starts another relationship with a Paramount executive, John Gould, who would have been another young hot body dude who appears in many, many, many portraits in the later work. And he has this cute quote, "I decided that I should try and fall in love. And that's what I'm going to do now with John Gould. But then it's just too hard. You think about a person constantly and it's just fantasy. It's not real." And then it just gets so involved. So it's like he wants love, but it's also, you know, autistic people do struggle with personal relationships sometimes, and intimacy can be a struggle sometimes. And it's really scary to fall in love on top of all of that, you know? But he does fall in love with John super hard. It is Valentine's Day this week, so I want you to look up this cute-ass art piece. It's called Candy Box. So it's a cute print painting of a candy box. I just love it.
Yeah, it's like very, very like kitschy, old-fashioned, like heart-shaped box.
Yeah, super like doily-ish.
Yeah, very doily, like kind of like old fashioned.
I love it. And Andy Warhol was kind of like kitschy a little bit. Mm. Like even in his personal taste, he collected cookie jars. Aww. And like, you know, he liked commodities.
Yeah, because they're comforting. Especially kitschy little things are comforting.
Yeah,
we all have little knickknacks.
Yeah, he loved a knickknack. So he does over 400 portraits of John. And, you know, this is just my, like, a little love note, but it's one of very, very many. But this one's really fucking tragic. So in 1984, Gould was diagnosed with AIDS.
Aww.
And apparently Andy just couldn't handle it. Like, he was deathly afraid of hospitals and medicine. And probably, you know, with his dad, is probably super triggering.
Yeah.
So they break up and John dies a year later. Aww. He would have been 33 years old.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. So Andy, towards the end of his life, would have been super fucking famous and admired, but also hated.
people that are like, I don't get it.
Well, and people hated that he made art a commodity. Mm-hmm. Like, people hate that. Like, art is not a commodity. Art is just art. But it's like, no, art needs to be a commodity so that we can make money. And people hated that he loved the idea of art as a business. Mm-hmm. In his final, like, towards the end of his career, he wanted to be a great businessman. Mm. Like, that was his goal. I want to be an art businessman. I want to be a robot. And so I think his work's beautiful and thoughtful, and the commentary on the world from the eyes of someone who stopped to notice the beauty in everyday ordinary, right? But, you know, because he stops to make you think about it, it's art. It really is.
Yeah. I think that there was a Keith Haring show at the Broad in downtown LA called Art is for Everybody. And I think that definitely – you know, he sparked all of that. So many, you know, the hoity-toity stuffy people are like, no, yeah, no, it should be our little world. You can't come into honestly, our world.
Yeah, you're so right. I look at it from a perspective of like fostering a culture of inclusion. Like even with the people that he was, like he loved people that had extreme personalities.
Yeah.
And I think it's okay to be, I don't think it was exploitative. Mm-mm. I think it was like, no, I want everybody here in my world. Mm-hmm. Like you can work here, you can be a part of this thing.
Yeah,
you know, like I think that's awesome.
Yeah. And what does it mean when you're, you know, when you have a muse in front of you that you're painting? What's different about having a muse?
Why does it matter that being, it's a sex worker? Yeah. Why is it different now?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. And I think the inspiration that artists have, especially when it comes to other people or people around them or loved ones, it could be like different and, you know, depending on the subject matter, depending on like what the painting is about, is are you exploiting them? You kind of are, regardless of what you're doing. Who cares though? Like if you're saying, hey, can I paint you? Is it saying, hey, can I exploit you for my personal gain? Right. It's kind of like, well, yeah, sure. Please do. As long as I get a copy. Signed copy of it.
I think it's like there has to be participation, right? On both ends. And I think that like, yes, he did make a lot of money doing what he did, but he very much included a lot of people in on that. Mm. And I think people wanted to be a part of it. And I think like he was part of a bigger picture and they knew that. I think that they could have been considered to have been using him just as much as he using them.
Yeah.
But there is one thing that one interview, one of the gals said, like, because he did a lot of these of a lot of different people and would charge commissioned work to do portraits. Mm. And it was said that, like, if he filled in your lip line color that he liked you, and if he made your lips, like, not registered that he didn't like you.
Oh, that's so good.
Like, little cheekiness, you know, like, oh, you're a clown. I'm going to make your lips big.
Yeah. Oh, I like that.
So his legacy lives on in so many ways. He actually has the highest price ever paid for at a Christie's auction on record. So shot sage blue Marilyn sold for $195 million at Christie's in 2022. And he's influenced so many people. Banksy, David Bowie, like all these different people. He was part of cultivating that underground and New York night scene that we know and love today. And he has so many accomplishments. But the person that should probably thank him the most is the CEO of Campbell's Soup.
For Joe, dude. Oh, my God. Campbell's loves this guy. And I think, too, like, even regardless if you're an art person, art historian, or even appreciate art, you see that soup can. And you know Andy Warhol. Like, I don't know, maybe not the Marilyn, maybe not the banana, like, but you see the soup can. And regardless if you know much about art, you know that this has something to do with pop art. So
a million percent
what that soup can looks like. And you see
a million percent
so many different replications of it hanging in galleries today by other artists that are taking that idea, knowing that it's like Andy Warhol would have been fine with this if I go ahead and take this.
Absolutely.
Because it's for everybody. Campbell's soup is for everybody.
Absolutely.
Watch your sodium, though.
Drink a glass of water afterwards. For sure. So the person at the party. Who do you think?
Oh, my God. It could be so many different weirdos. I don't know. Maybe, like, I mean, I could think of maybe, like, somebody eccentric, like a Johnny Depp type of situation. Or, I don't know, somebody, what's his name? Tim Burton or some shit. Like a Beetlejuice.
Like a Beetlejuice.
Yeah.
I don't know how you're going to feel about this one. At all. So Kim Kardashian.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I think Kim herself is a commodity.
Exactly. Yeah. That's exactly
she's
it.
A business.
Like, at face value, I think that she's a business.
Yeah.
I think she's an incredibly smart businesswoman. I think he would have loved her.
Yeah.
I think he would have.
Oh, he would have done Prince of Her for sure.
Oh, yeah. And I think he would have loved social media culture today.
Oh, yeah.
I think he would have eaten it up. And I have like a love-hate opinion of the Kardashians and everything. So I'm not saying this to hate on Andy Warhol. It's just there's such a direct connection there of their ability to influence the world at large. And I think he really would have been fond of that. I really do. I think he would have been impressed by... I mean, they're the original, the reality television stars. And look at how far it's come. I mean, Kylie Jenner has, or like she's a billionaire.
And
that's insane.
And they also steal images.
And they steal shit. Yeah, exactly. And, Kim wearing the Marilyn Monroe dress. Like, he would have just eaten that
shit. Oh, he would have loved that. Of this bitch. Okay, the this audacity.
The audacity.
Yes.
So, yeah. So, that's Andy. Dandy Andy.
That's a
the short version, which is a long story.
Seriously, that's a good one. I learned so much about pop art.
Good. Yeah.
Weird dude. And I like it.
Dude, I love him. So thank you guys so much for being here. We had a crazy week this week where we actually charted in the United States Visual Arts Podcasts. Boop. And it's all thanks to you and your support. We really, really appreciate
thank
it.
You.
We are on Instagram.
Baroque.
Podcast. I just printed out a bunch of stickers for sale if you want them. Or go on Patreon, be a patron.
We have a newsletter.
We have a newsletter you can sign up for.
Links in bio.
There's Patreon. But thank you so much. Thanks for being here. Thanks for you being you. We love you so much.
Love you.
I love you.
Bye. Bye.